God,
grant
me strength
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the difference. God's will, not ours, be done.
The group would like to specifically welcome newcomers to AA. Anyone new to the group or anyone to this or anyone to AA, please raise your hand if you would like so we can welcome you. No. This group strongly suggests sponsorship and working the 12 steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you have any questions about sponsorship, please see any group members after the meeting. Would all group members please raise your hand?
Thank you for your service.
And we have free literature for available back here on the table to my right. And if anybody needs a Big Book, please see the treasurer, which is Terry, or myself, after the meeting. Our seventh condition states that every AA group is out to be fully self-supporting. At this time, we'll be passing the basket. We welcome everyone to please attend our business meeting on the last Monday of each month at 6:45. The church requests that smokers please use the provided containers and do not leave cigarette butts on the ground or in the parking lot. We ask that the use of the church is limited to the bathrooms, which are located to my left, the these double doors, and then straight across and to the right. And please turn off all cell phones at this time. We ask that you limit your movement to during the meeting, especially during the speaker talk. And I asked Chris to read the preamble.
I told him he could say any name and I'll come up and act accordingly. But my name's Eric and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, sir. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks for reading.
And I have asked Brian to read the 12 steps.
Hey, Brian.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic. And these are the 12 steps of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. and 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you.
And I asked Jamie to read the set-aside prayer.
All right, Jamie.
I'm Jamie and I'm an alcoholic.
Jamie.
Dear God, please set aside anything I think I know about myself, about my illness, about the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, especially you, God, so that I might have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me to see the truth. Amen.
Amen.
And please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Tina from I just forgot what she just said.
Solution Speakers, talk to you.
Yeah, it's okay. Solution Seekers.
Solution Speakers.
Hi guys, I'm Tina. I'm an alcoholic. To be fair, it took me a good while to remember what my home group was called. So I sat there like for a long time. Solution Seekers meets Tuesday, 6 p.m. in Horsham. It's a big book step study. So my name is Tina. I'm an alcoholic. This is a little like intimidating, to be honest, standing here, you know, with the lights on me. It's been a while since I spoke for an hour, so I'll do the best that I can. So my sobriety date is July 24th of 2018. I am definitely an alcoholic. I grew up in Montgomery County. Most of my family are in Alcoholics Anonymous or have some type of mental health or alcoholism. Most of them are currently in Alcoholics Anonymous and sober. There were many times that we were not, you know, one family in, one family out, that type of thing. So I did know that alcohol was a problem for my family when I was younger. So in growing up, my parents were sober from alcohol. We didn't have alcohol in the house. I didn't know what it was. It was like literally gone. Didn't realize what it was, anything like that. Then all of a sudden, alcohol was in my house, and it was an absolute problem. I was in about middle school. Both of my parents, which I didn't know at the time, they were both alcoholic. Both of them had relapsed. Same time, hell broke loose almost immediately. All of a sudden, you know, dad's angry or mom's sad or like everything changed. Emotions changed. Voices changed. Behaviors, income, you know, food in the cabinets, like everything. Everything changed all of a sudden all at once. And being in middle school, you kind of try and wrap your head around this, like, what is happening? You know, you get, like, you know, little tidbits of information, and it seemed as though, you know, alcohol was now in the picture, you know, maybe some substances were in the picture. Like, you kind of start putting things together, but of course, I'm not, like, 11 years old being like, this is alcoholism, and alcoholism, you know, does this to this person, but you get those little, like, glimpses of what it is as I grew up. So, even during that time, my thing was I was going to stick to work. I was going to stick to schoolwork. I was going to stick to sports. I went and I lived with different family members. I lived in different church groups. It was not like a pleasant time of my life. And I definitely attributed that to some type of substance. So like immediately, like that's what I stuck to. And of course, like a lot of us think of, it's like, I'm never going to be that. I'm never going to be like my mom was. I'm never going to be a depressive drunk. I know what, you know, alcohol does to me. That type of thinking. So, of course, that didn't work. You know, here I am. So they were good. They were bad. They came in and out of my life through that time. I went through high school. I didn't touch a drink until I was 18. I was like the tail end of like senior. I had a three-night or 3.98 GPA. I'm, you know, magna cum laude. I'm graduating from like a private high school with like perfect grades. I was a cheerleader, which was not cool in my school. I wasn't like head of the squad, like, you know, like Miss Popularity. Like I went to like a small private high school where like cheerleaders were weirdos. You know, we only had a couple of friends. But I was happy. I had my core group of friends. I like everything was great. Like I, you know, I definitely struggled with like some emotional stuff. Like I was living with my aunt at the time. You know, there was stuff going on there, but that's like what I stuck to. I was like, I'm gonna get through this. Like, you know, I'm gonna do what I have to do. And my first drink was at 18. So, you know, I wasn't the party or anything like that. But then when I first had my first drink, I don't remember the specific drink. I don't remember the specific time. I do remember I was like smoking weed, drinking a little bit on the weekends, you know, with my group of friends, you know, whatever, nothing even crazy. But almost immediately I started thinking about it all the time. I wanted to know what we were doing the next weekend, like, you know, that kind of story, which all of us kind of understand. But looking back, I went through, I'm a journaler. Like I love to journal. I love dream journals. I love to like say how I'm thinking, how I'm feeling. And I did that a lot when I was a kid, especially when like, you know, my home life was, you know, all over the place. And years ago, I looked back, my dad had this like, you know, had all of my stuff in the attic and I looked it through some of my journals and I'm reading like, I think about drinking more than I say. I'm the type of person that's gonna drink ash at the bottom of my drink. Like, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm writing these things that like, you know, like alcoholism, and I had like no idea. And I thought that self-knowledge, right? Like seeing that my parents are alcoholics or whatever that may look like to me as a middle schooler, that alcohol does not do well with my parents. It's probably not gonna do well with me, but like, you know, they didn't do anything for me. Like I needed that experience and I needed years and years and years of that experience to really understand like what I was suffering from. So I wasn't that kid that like thought, you know, I'm different or like I never fit in. Like I didn't feel any of that. Like I really didn't. And a lot of people identify with that, but like that was not me. Like I had that core group of friends. Like I was, you know, captain of my cheerleading squad, however like weird that was in my school. It was like I had my grades, like I felt really good about myself. And then at some point, like, I don't know if maybe I was pushing that down, different emotions, whatever it was, but like I found alcohol and like I just identified with it and I just wanted it. And it took me years and years and years to understand like why that was happening to me and like what that meant. But you know, more qualifiers. So I got into, you know, drinking, whatever. I started, you know, journaling those feelings, met a guy, you know, we meet guys, met a guy, introduced me to like my form of alcoholism that like took off. It was absolutely wild. You know, when that guy wasn't around, I met a different guy. I filled all these things, you know, like I found my higher power in all these different things. A lot of it was substances. A lot of it was whatever it was, stealing, you know, lying, cheating, manipulating, all those things that like I became that I swore I wanted because like I watched how it destroyed my entire childhood. Yeah, so trying to get together my story here. So anyway, it doesn't really matter. My qualifiers are my qualifiers, right? I was a liar, a cheat, I stole, I did whatever I had to, right? So met this guy, had this, you know, absolute terrible habit. At some point, I decided that I was going to go to nursing school. It's like a huge part of my story. So I decided to go to the nursing school, somehow graduated with my full-blown addiction. It was absolutely insane. You know, using what I had to in the bathrooms. I'm stealing from patients like in the hospital during rounds, like with my like student scrubs on. Like it was like really sad. I was manipulating, getting my way through school. Somehow I graduated, like actually graduated, took my course on my own, graduated with my registered nursing license. And I felt like that was what I needed to do. Like that's like how I was going to survive life is like, I'm going to get this thing. And like, this is what I'm going to do. And at least I mean something to somebody. I can have an income. I can give my, you know, my talents, my whatever it is, like I can actually do something with this, you know. So I got my registered nursing license. The first job I got, I was working in home care, stole, lied from these people. It was absolutely horrendous, continued going through that. So eventually, you know, you can fill in the blanks. I got arrested. It was my wake-up call. I had my nursing license that was going to be torn away from me. I got arrested with a paraphernalia charge. Registered nurses can't, like, you know, have paraphernalia and be arrested and, like, still be a registered nurse, right? Like, that makes total sense. But in the time, of course, I'm like, how dare you? You can't rip this from me. This is the only thing that I've ever wanted. It's the only thing that I'm good at. It's the only thing that, like, I know how to do. And I truly meant that. Like, 100%, like, I enjoyed nursing. You know, I'd be stealing, you know, money from the wallets of my patients. I'd be, you know, taking stuff from their homes. But, like, I truly enjoyed nursing. It's like that insanity. It's completely insane. I enjoyed going to work, and I had to steal from these people, and I had to manipulate them, and I had all these behaviors that, like, I didn't know how to stop doing, and it didn't make me feel good, but, like, being their nurse did. And so, like, I had this, like, you know, terrible time trying to, like, wrap my head around, like, I really want to be a nurse, but I really can't stop doing this, and, like, I feel like complete crap, and it was, like, absolutely horrendous, and I'm in this terrible depression, and, you know, I'm doing what I have to do to get what I have to get, and, like, I finally get arrested, and, you know, looking back, like, it 100% saved my life. And honestly, so did them, you know, trying to take my nursing license. If I didn't have that above me, like, I'm not sure if I would have gotten sober. So I got arrested in July of 2018 on a possessions charge. I went into a psych ward. I went to rehab. It was not my first time trying. And, you know, it was absolutely terrible, but it was the one thing that, like, really stopped me. So I get out of treatment, and I literally am in meetings, and I'm in, you know, I'm sitting down with women, and I'm a mess. I'm like, I am literally going to kill myself if I can't get sober because I need my nursing license. That was it. It wasn't because I want the consequences to stop. It wasn't like I really, really want to stay sober. It wasn't anything like that. I said, the only thing that I know how to do is be a nurse. And if I'm not a nurse, then I'm not anybody. I wasn't a daughter. I wasn't, you know, a girlfriend. I wasn't a good human being. Like, I literally was nothing if I was not a nurse. Which saved my life. So I'm sorry. This is, like, anxiety ridden. I don't like this at all. So, part of my story that I want to jump back a little bit. I met that guy. I was into all sorts of stuff. And one of the points I tried to get sober, I was living with my dad, who was sober at this point. And I come home, and he found, you know, my stuff, whatever. I was still a nurse at this point. And I come home, and him and his girlfriend are there. And his girlfriend had 36 years of sobriety. And I come in, and I walk into the house, and, you know, he's like, "Teen, I found this stuff, and it's not mine. And I don't know what you're talking about." And he's like, "No, like, I saw it. Like, it's yours. Like, you know, what are we going to do about this?" And I absolutely broke down, and I said, "I'm a terrible human being. You know, like, I don't deserve to live. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, I've done this to you. Like, I'm a piece of crap. You know, I'm sobbing." And his girlfriend looked at me and said, like, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry that you have to deal with this, and I'm so sorry that you're going through this." And it was the first time that, like, you know, I realized that somebody else didn't see me the way that I did. Somebody else, like, looked at me and saw that, like, there was something inside me that wasn't, like, an alcoholic piece of crap that doesn't care about anybody or do, you know, like, that's all I saw myself as. I'm going into these clients' home, like, I'm saying, like, I'm stealing from them, like, I can't even be the nurse that I want to be, like, I'm nobody, like, I'm not a good girlfriend, I'm not a good daughter, like, I'm not a good sister, I'm nobody, like, I'm such a piece of crap. And she said, "I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." And I went into treatment then, and I didn't get sober. You know, and, like, all these things happened, and I finally, you know, got sober this last time, or I, you know, went into treatment this last time, and, like, all those little things that happened in between, like, that changed, like, the course of my sobriety without getting sober at that moment. I had a lot of those. I went into treatment this one time, and there was a nurse that was in sobriety, and, like, she revealed that to me. You know, she was like, "Listen, like, I'm an AA. You know, I'm an AA. Like, I get it. Like, you can do this." You know what I mean? Like, she's working at a treatment center. And, you know, at the time, it didn't mean anything to me as much as, like, looking back, I'm like, holy crap, like, that gave me a couple minutes. You know what I mean? Like, things like that, like, really, they were planted. And so I get out, and, like I said, I'm like, you know, if I can't have my nursing license, then screw this, and I don't care, and this is ridiculous, and it's the only thing that I care about, it's the only thing I want. And I found somebody that was willing to work with me then. Right? Like, I'm literally in meetings, like, F this, and I don't want to be sober, and screw this, and I was just so angry, because I still had that thought in me, like, I'm a terrible human being, like, this isn't worth it, like, what's the point of living, like, what, like, there's no point, like, if I can't do what I love, and I can't do the one thing that I'm, like, set to do, then, like, what is the point? So, my mom tells me that she met somebody that, you know, like, please, I hope that this girl can help you, and it was my first sponsor, her name was Chelsea. And she comes over to my mom's house, because I got kicked out of my recovery house because I was being a nut. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't using, but like all that like crazy thinking, and I'm still like early in my sobriety, and I'm just absolutely crazy. I'm saying I'm going to meetings, but I'm going to the mall, like stupid stuff. Get kicked out. I'm in my mom's house, and she's like desperately trying to save my life, and I meet this girl Chelsea, and I told her right off the bat, like, this is ridiculous. I don't think this is going to work for me. I don't know what I'm doing here. And she's like, okay, like let's try and work the steps. So she met me every single week, and she met me, and she worked the steps, and I was spewing, like, so much, like, craziness and BS and hate her way, and not towards her, but just, like, just, you know, like, that anger and that angst, like, I hate this. This is absolutely horrendous. And I didn't understand, like, what I was suffering from. Like, I didn't understand that, you know, the reason that I was so angry or, like, that I took my solution away, and now I don't know what it is, and that's why I'm lying and cheating and stealing, and I'm used to, like, this life, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I wanted to stop, and I didn't know how, and she just met with me, and she was patient with me, and she loved me through it, and I just saw something that she had, and I kind of wanted that, and I didn't know if I was able to express that at the time, you know, but again, like, looking back, like, it was so profound, and it changed the course. It turns out that this girl knew the guy that I got arrested with. And she knew, you know, who I thought was the love of my life. Absolutely. He was, like, the best thing that ever happened. And even, you know, in sobriety, I'm like, but he's in jail, but it's okay. Like, you know, we'll be together. And she's like, no, like, absolutely not. Like, let's revert here. You know, but, like, you're attached to all those things. And she knew my brother. She knew my dad. Like, she fit into my story where, like, I didn't realize that she would. And it just, it was, like, such a God moment. And so she's taking me through the steps, and she meets me every week, and I had no idea what was happening at the time. You know, we're opening the book, we're just reading straight from the book. Like, that's how she taught me. And she was like, you're going to help others. And I'm like, she's like, no, like, it's a condition. And I'm like, I don't know, like, we can try. Like, I can't promise, but okay. She's like, whatever, like, that works. You know, like, the littlest bit. Like, she was willing to work with me in, like, my complete insanity, because, like, that's how she was taught. And that's, like, what I do when I meet with, you know, women now. I'm like, we go to crack the book. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, you need to help others. I'm like, huh. Like, yeah, right. I'm like, I'm so serious. Like, we're going to talk about this when we get to the end. And, like, every time they get to the end, they can't wait. You know, like, it's just so neat. So, like, I'm angry. You know, we're going through the book. You know, we're talking about being powerlessness, and we're talking about alcoholism and the craving and the obsession. And I'm starting to understand, like, a little bit, you know, about alcoholism. We just keep going. You know, she tells me to go to big book meetings. You know, speaker meetings are great, and, like, that's great. Like, find the solution. Like, find people that, like, surround yourself with people who actually, like, care about this program. Because, like, you're gonna die. Like, you're like me. Like, we go right back to the insanity. Like, you know, lying about where you're going, and then, you know, and then getting caught. Like, that's not how we live anymore. Like, stop lying about it. You know, like little things like that. She just taught me, like, one by one. You know, so she started talking to me about alcoholism, and although I didn't get it then, you know, we read through the book, and we read through the chapters, and it took a while to get through step one, and she's teaching me little by little, and I'm just kind of planting it, and still angry, and still yelling at meetings, and we keep going. You know, we go to step two, and we came to believe, and, you know, we talk about that. I'm like, I have a God. She's like, okay, cool. You know, we talk about, like, well, what, like, write a list of, like, what your God looks like. And I remember, like, being in her apartment, and, like, literally having no idea what God looked like. Like, I don't know, like, honest. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like, loving, I guess, like having absolutely no idea. She's like, well, this is what I want my God to look like. Like, what about you? Like, what would you want, you know, like, God to look like for you? She told me that originally her God, like, she said, think about somebody that, like, you, that has loved you unconditionally. Like, is there one person in your life that 100% has loved you unconditionally, and you felt that from the beginning? No, I'm like, yeah, like, my grandmother, like, she, you know, she loved God, she loved the Bible, she loved scriptures, like, she did, she loved me unconditionally, she was hilarious, she was from West Virginia, she had, like, an accent, and it was, like, really cute, and I loved it from the beginning, and I just love my grandmother. And she's like, okay, like, can that be God? Like, can that unconditional love that, like, she had for you, like, could that be it? I'm like, that's not, like, what I grew up with. You know what I mean? Like, my God was kind of hateful. Like, I don't know. My God hated me. Like, I don't know. He didn't, you know. Like, just, like, changing it, like, little by little. Like, she just kind of tried to, like, plant that. Like, oh, let's, like, go this way with it. Like, you know, like, your idea of things, like, might not be, like, 100% accurate. And again, like, I didn't understand what was going on. And I just, you know, kept going. And we got down on our knees together. And we did the third step prayer, which was, like, so awkward. You know, like, that first time you ever do the third step prayer. And you feel like you're reading from, like, you know, Egyptian scripts. It feels so old. It's like, you know, it feels really awkward. And you're trying to read at the same time. And it's, like, really awkward. And you're, you know, sitting there with your sponsor. And, you know, I did it. And at the time, you know, that wasn't profound for me. You know, kneeling and reading and, you know, praying with my sponsor was not, like, a profound moment in that moment. You know, but, like, she was showing me, like, a way of life that I didn't understand. Like, she would pick me up. She'd bring me places. Like, I didn't see her lying. I didn't see her, like, eyeing up my purse to see what was in it. You know what I mean? Like, she wasn't doing those things. Like, she was actually using, like, money to, like, buy things. You know what I mean? Like, she wasn't, like, sticking them in her pocket, like, being crazy. Like, it's just, like, those little things that were, like, such a big deal that I didn't see it then. So we get to the fourth step. You know, and I don't know. She told me, like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you don't really have to worry about it that much. Like, there's nothing that you could possibly put on your fourth step that, like, I wouldn't understand on your fifth. Like, there's nothing you could say. So, like, she's sharing with me, like, some of the crazy things she's done in jail. Or, you know what I mean? Like, she has all these crazy things. And I'm like, you know, I share with her my craziest thing. And she's like, girl, like, I get it. You know, and, like, it made me feel open. Like, whatever. Like, we can share this. Like, that didn't really bother me. We talked about a fifth. Probably the biggest thing in my fifth step that was, you know, profound was that, so I had this, like, horrible, crazy resentment towards my aunt. So I was saying that, like, you know, my family fell apart, you know, I'm in middle school, I'm, you know, with church members, whatever. And I was living with my mom, and my mom, you know, had been sober and not sober, and at this moment, like, she's not sober. And long story short, it wasn't a healthy environment, you know, like, she was drinking a lot, like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't good. We weren't positive she was drinking. At some point, she just went off somewhere else. I had to find somewhere to live. My brother was in college. He wasn't doing very well. So I'm, like, literally, like, 13. Maybe max, I'm 14 years old. And my mom says, you know, I can't take care of you anymore. I'm leaving. I don't want to be here. Like, I'm going to move. So you can come with me or not. And I have a younger brother who's 12, 13 years old. I'm like, I don't know what to do. You know, I call my brother's girlfriend. She comes and picks me up. I go to my aunt's house. I show up at my aunt's door. She's never had any kids. Her brother is, you know, my father. And I show up there, my dad is nowhere to be found. Like, I don't even know where he was at the time, jail, rehab, whatever. And I literally just show up on her doorstep, didn't call her or nothing. I was like, hey, my mom's leaving, I need somewhere to go. And she sat me down at the table, we talked about it a little bit. I told her, you know, what was going on with my mom. And she said, you know, you can absolutely come and live with me. Like, you know, you and Mike can come live with me. But, like, I'm not going to be your fun aunt anymore. And, like, I'm going to have to be your mom. And that pissed me off. I was resentful for 20 years, 20 years, 20, 25 years, because she told me that she wasn't going to be my fun aunt anymore. She was going to have to be my mom, you know, and I'm talking about it with my sponsor. And I'm like, yeah, but, like, I was only 14. And that wasn't nice to say to me because, like, it wasn't my fault. You know what I mean? It wasn't my fault that my mom, like, left me and abandoned me. And it wasn't my fault that I had to go ask her. And, like, I thought I was being, like, the, you know, the big sister to protect my brother. And all that was true. But she's like, your aunt never had any kids. She had a two-bedroom house. She spent all of her life savings in 4 years to take care of me and my brother. She had to, like, as far as, like, you know, the state was concerned, she had to, like, reconstruct her house so that my brother had a room. She had to, like, get rid of her office, computer room, and, like, put a door and, like, reconstruct the house so that we had space. You know, she spent her life savings because she now had to take care of two teenagers, and I was in sports, and Mike was in sports, and we were an hour from our school. She didn't want to take us out of her school, so she's driving us to school. You know, and for 25 years, I'm like, she is such a terrible person, and how could she do that to me? And I was a child. And, like, my sponsor's sitting here like, Tina, like, you're holding on to this resentment of this woman who, like, loved you unconditionally. Like, it wasn't her fault that, like, her brother, you know, wasn't able to take care of his kids. Like, how can you put that on somebody? Like, is that, like, the way that you would want to be, like, treated? And it, like, blew my mind. Like, I it was like so crazy to me that like just that perception shift. And like we talked about other things in the fourth step, but like that one kind of hit me. Now, the fifth step didn't change. It didn't give me a spiritual awakening. It didn't like change my whole, I'm still angry at this point. I'm still trying not to steal. You know what I mean? Like I'm still sick. But like I was taught and she was taught like in AA, like we go through the steps like once a week. So like we're by the fifth step. We're like, I don't know, 6 weeks in. You know what I mean? We're not that far in. We're six. So I was maybe maximum like 6 months after treatment, all this stuff. You know, so I'm still sick. We get through the fourth and fifth, and we talk about our sixth and seventh, and, you know, even still, like, one of my biggest character defects is, like, I am right, and I'm sure my husband can tell you, you know, my kids, like, I'm right, and you are wrong, and it's one of the biggest things that I have. Like, I have this, like, just ego, you know, which we all have, and we all talk about getting rid of, but, like, I am right, and it's very difficult to tell me so, and it's just something I continue to have to work on because, you know, they're going to continue to end up on my nightly inventory when I, like, owe an apology. But, yeah, so we're talking about sixth and seventh. You know, I'm writing down all these things. I'm praying about these things. We get to the eighth and ninth. And this is when, like, everything changed for me. Everything changed. So we get to the eighth. You know, I have my list. We're talking about our list from, you know, the fourth and fifth. And we're adding some people and stuff. And my sponsor told me to write down a list of now, maybe, and never. That's how she taught me to do my eighth step. So I did. And my nows were, like, my family. You know, like my mom, my dad, my siblings, people who are in AA at this point. Like currently my mom has 8 years of sobriety. My dad hasn't had a drink in like 15 years, like today. My older brother does his very best. He might have a couple months now. He comes in and out, but he continues to try. My younger brother's the black sheep of our family. He doesn't have an addiction problem. It's like bizarre. I don't know how you do that. You know what I mean? Like how do you take a drink and like not, you know, black out and end up in prison? So they were, you know, on my list. So, like, I met with my younger brother. I'm like, I think I owe you $200. I don't even know. I have it in my purse. Like, you know, I paid for his dinner or whatever. He's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. That was it. You know what I mean? Like, we don't talk very much. We talk, but it's just, you know, it's like he felt it awkward. He's like, I don't know. You know, he didn't know if he could order a beer or not. You know what I mean? He's like, he's confused. My mom and dad, they're like, you know, please just stop, like, ending up in jail. Like, please. You know, please be home when I ask you to be home. Like, please answer the phone. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care. I don't care about money. I don't care about anything else. I'm like, yeah, but I stole this and I stole that. They're like, I know. Like, you're crazy. Like, of course, I know. It's not a big deal. And so I'm doing those. One of those that I had, you know, I wanted to make a financial amends. I'm like, I can do this. You know, like, I'm working as a waitress. You know, I don't have my nursing license. They, like, hold it over my head a little bit so that I can, like, do good. Which was amazing for me now. Of course, then I'm like, oh, this is absolutely horrendous. And I'm in a recovery house and I'm trying to save money for a car. And my mom, I call my mom Mims. And she was my Uber Mims. And she would pick me up at my recovery house with a little sticker on her car that said Uber Mims. And she would drive me to my job. It was so sweet. You know, and I'm trying to make living amends to her. And she's trying to make living amends to me. And it's like this awkward, weird struggle. And she's like picking me up from my recovery house. And drive me to work, so I'm like, you know, like I'm a nurse, I'm used to making money, and now I'm, you know, I'm in a recovery house and I'm a waitress, and you know, like I literally am thinking this way, I'm like, this is ridiculous. You know, sober and having a roof over my head and you know, food to eat, and I'm like, I'm saving for a car, this and that, but like, I had a little bit of money, and I owed this woman, I don't know, I think it was like $200. It was like a girl who was about my age, she used to do my hair in her house, she had a little studio in her house, and you know, prior to COVID times, which I'm sure was awesome. She had that in her house during COVID. But anyway, so I used to go to her house and she would do my hair and I would pay her cash. And the one time I went there, and I think it was with my mom, I went there, she did our hair and I was like, I have to go to the bathroom. And I like stole all the money out of her purse. I literally just handed her. And she knew it. She knew it. I knew it. It was like this obvious thing and it had been years. And I'm like, okay, like I owe this girl $200. I feel like this might be like a good one. It's not going to be easy, but it's not that much money. And like, I definitely owe her and she knows it, whatever. So I decided to give this girl back her money. So I think I reached out to her on Facebook or something with support of my sponsor. Of course, I included my sponsor in all this. And I said, like, I owe you money. I want to sit down and like, I don't even think I said that. I said, I think I want to sit down with you and like have a conversation, something like that. She said, absolutely not. You're you know, the B word, and you're this, and you're that, and you stole from me, and absolutely not. And I said, I understand, like, you know, I would like to give you that money back. You know, what's your Venmo? And she sent me her Venmo and I sent the money. Like, just like that, you know, I just gave it to her. I didn't say anything else. I didn't apologize. I didn't say anything. And like, she literally responded to me like within minutes and said, thank you so much. I forgive you. Forgive you. I didn't ask for forgiveness. None of that. Like, I thought that I was like the worst human being. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm going to give you back this money. I'm sure you're not going to, you know, it didn't matter to me if she said sorry or not. I thought. She said, I forgive you. I was like, this is great. I felt great. I'm like, cool. Like, I can do this. Like, this is amazing. And it turned into this big thing. She knew this girl who knew this girl who knew this girl who was an ex-client of mine that I stole from. Right? So I was saying that, like, I had an addiction that, like, you know, forced me to do things that I didn't want to do, but I knew what I was doing. So I was working in home care, and I had this client who had ALS. He was on a ventilator. He literally relied on me to keep him alive. Literally. He was on a ventilator. He could not be left alone at all. I was working for this man. I stole from his kids. I stole from him. I stole his coins. I stole his wife's makeup. I stole her clothes. I stole everything. Gift cards, stole out of her purse. Like, literally went into, like, the kids' money. Stole their money. Like, it was, like, horrendous. I worked for them for, like, 4 years. And they, like, made my nursing career. Like, it was the first job I ever had. Like, I loved them to death. And I still do. Like, I truly love that family. And, like, I thought I, you know, I went there to do good, and I just couldn't. I just didn't, ever. Like, I'm so grateful that I even kept that man alive. You know, like, I'm doing whatever I had to do, like, you know, using, you know, my former alcohol in their house. Like, it was absolutely horrendous. And I was so ashamed that, like, I couldn't even go into the county that they lived in because, like, I was so absolutely ashamed of my behavior. And the hairdresser knew these people roundabout. Knew somebody who knows somebody who knew somebody. And I get a message from somebody saying, if you're going to make amends to the hairdresser, then you're going to make amends to these people or say sorry or whatever they said. Because, like, you owe them, like, a true apology. And, like, my heart sank. And it was, like, the worst thing that I could possibly hear. And I'm like, you know, call my sponsor. And I'm absolutely, like, in tears. Like, just devastated. And again, I'm a piece of crap. I'm a nobody. Like, this is horrendous. Like, how could I do that to somebody? Like, I'm never going to be forgiven. Like, I can't even contact them. I'm going to be arrested. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just the insanity. And I go and I meet with my sponsor that week, and she's like, we're going to make amends now. You know, and she's, like, all excited. And I'm like, like, I can't. Like, I owe them a lot of money. We talked about how much money I owe them. And I, like, came up with an honest number. The most honest number I could come up with, it was, like, $2,500. Think I owe them about this. It could be more, it could be less. I have absolutely no idea. I don't know. She's like, okay, so, like, that's the amount of money you're going to give back to them. You know, if we can get a hold of them, like, why don't we set an amount of money that you can pay up front? And, you know, and I literally am arguing with her, like, no, I need a car. You know, because my mom's taking me out, like, Ubermans is, like, on her way. And you know what I mean? Like I need, you know, I can't be relying on Ubermans anymore. And, like, I need my own car. And, like, I need to get to my really important waitressing job that's, like, you know, 3 miles down the road. And it's, like, really important for me. I got to, you know, I got to have an apartment and da-da-da. And she, like, literally was like, no, it's not your money. Stop. Nope. Not going to buy into it. Not going to buy into it. It's not your money. You owe her $2,500. How much do you have? You know, we talked about, I don't even remember how much I had, but not a lot. Not that much over $1,000. Let's say I had, like, $1,400. She's like, you're going to pay $1,000 up front. She was not playing games with me. She wasn't like, let's do halfsies. Like, no. Like, you're going to pay $1,000 up front, and we're going to pay them on a weekly basis if you can get a hold of them, but, like, we're going to get a hold of them. I was like, okay. So I texted the number that I had for this woman, which it had been maybe, like, 5 years since I had been in contact with them. And I texted her, like, hoping to God that number changed. You know what I mean? I'm like, please, that'd be awesome. Like, maybe send a check to their house. Like, forget about it. She answered. She was like, can I call you? I don't think I've ever been so afraid in my entire life. Like, I literally felt like I was going to vomit blood. Like, it was the worst experience of my life. And I was like, yeah. You know, I'm with my sponsor. She's like, absolutely. Like, she's like, oh, we can do this. I wanted to punch her in the face. It was absolutely horrendous. And, you know, so we answered the call. We talked a little bit. And she asked me questions like, you know, were you using drugs? What were you doing? Why were you always asleep? Like, what did you steal from me? I know you stole my coin, so what else is it? You know, she had Jim on speakerphone, who was the man who had ALS. I was totally with it. Like, he had all his faculties. He absolutely knew who I was and what was going on. He was the man on the ventilator. And she was like, I have Jim here. And, you know, she's like, Jim, like, what do you want to say? And she would wait and see, figure out what he wanted to say. We had this conversation, and she was not as mean as I thought. She didn't threaten to call the police. She didn't ask me where I was. But she was angry. Rightfully so. And she She's like, what else did you steal? And, you know, I told her I stole money, I stole clothes, I stole makeup. And she's like, did you steal this? Like, yes or no? Did you do this? Yes or no? The only thing that I left out was, like, the severity of the type of alcohol I was using, is I wasn't 100% honest about that, which is what my sponsor had told me to do. So I just followed the advice of my sponsor, and we felt as though it might be a little bit more harm than good. So we had that conversation, and she said, I think you owe me about $1,200, $1,400. Like, that's the amount of coins that you stole. And I'm, like, looking at my sponsor. Like, she's like, no. And she said, no, you are, you know, $2,400, $2,500. And I said, okay. And I said, no, I think that number is more around $2,500. And she's like, okay. I said, I have $1,000. And she's like, I want a cashier's check. Like, don't try to play me. You know what I mean? Like, don't try me a check, like a bad check. She was like, you know, like, that's fine. You know, send it to me. And I said, can I come and visit? You know, can I come in person and give this to you? And she asked Jim, and Jim said no. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had to respect that. Although, like, I would have loved to see Jim, and I would have loved to make amends, you know, like, to his face. And that would have been really, really hard. But I would have really felt good about that. But I said, okay. So I sent the money, and then I sent, I think it was like $25 or $50 every month. You know, while I was waitressing, and eventually I got my nursing license back, and I started sending $100 every month, and it felt really good. You know, like I just felt like, okay, like I'm still here, like I'm not arrested, like, you know, they're not happy with me, and they probably sort of hate me, but like I got through it. Like that was like on my nevers list. That was 100%. That was never ever gonna happen. I was gonna be like, you know who I want to make amends to? Jim. That's like my first, like number one, like let's go. It was absolutely horrendous. And, like, I got through that. Like, my sponsor, like, helped me through that. And it just made me feel really good. And I'm in a meeting, and I'm like, I just made this amends. And it was, like, really awesome. And I don't know, da-da-da. And after the meeting, someone was like, you had a spiritual awakening. I was like, interesting. Like, that's cool. Like, that's what it feels like. It didn't have to be this, like, profound thing. And it didn't happen by fourth. And a lot of people talk about that happening in the fourth and fifth, that your whole perception changes. And it didn't happen for me. I had that moment with my aunt, and like that was really cool, but it didn't change my whole perception. I'm still going to meetings, like cursing and yelling and screaming. You know, and I get to this part, and I stop cursing and yelling and screaming. I'm like, I can do this now. I'm still sober. I didn't relapse. I'm not drinking. They are sort of like on the mend. They are like sort of starting to forgive me. That's the step, right? I'm like, I can do this. Like I sort of, you know, like to Uber Vince picking me up. Like, I could deal with that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't need a car right at that moment. Like, I was happy living in the sobriety house. Like, little by little, like, I started feeling that way. And we continued to go through the step process. You know, we did 10, 11, 12. I started sponsoring, which is when I had my, you know, my second spiritual awakening. Like, I started sponsoring women. It took a while to find, you know, a woman who actually wanted to go through the steps. And that was difficult for me. You know what I mean? I'm like, I need to save lives. And, like, these people aren't listening. And, like, it's my fault that they're not calling me anymore. And she's like, it's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. The first sponsee I had, she, like, brought me, you know, together. She was like, Tina is ready to sponsor. You need one. And, like, here you go. And, you know, and she kind of knew that, like, that girl was, like, in and out. It wasn't going to work, which was perfect for me. So, like, I'm driving this girl, my first ever sponsee. I'm driving her to court. I don't even remember what it was. It was an all-day situation. Like, I literally, like, brought her to the courthouse, didn't see her for hours, and I'm sitting there, you know, doing whatever at the courthouse. And I forget if it was on the way there or on the way back. I was talking to her about, you know, my nursing license, but I'm, you know, waitressing and da-da-da. And, like, this nursing license was so incredibly important to me. And I'm talking to her on the way, and I was like, we're on the way back, whatever. And I said, you know, like, whatever. Like, I like waitressing. Like, I mean, it is what it is. Like, I'm going to continue to try for my nursing license, but, like, whatever. Like, if it doesn't come back, like, I'll just find something else. And, like, I couldn't believe, like, what was coming out of my mouth. It was, like, insane. It's, like, you know, I'm, like, 9 months sober or something, like, screaming and yelling that, like, I'm going to kill myself if I don't have my nursing license back. And I said that, like, I was okay with it. I was okay if I didn't get my nursing license back. I was, like, this is amazing. Like, you know, it happened. Like, without me knowing it, all these things started to happen. And that girl didn't stay sober, and, like, that was okay. And, you know, but like those things, like that, like those spiritual awakenings that I had, you know, was like teaching somebody else how to work through the steps, like, and like revitalizing like what I like understood about the steps. And I didn't understand the step process for a long time. And then I started to understand the step process once I'm bringing somebody else through. It was like so cool. You know, I didn't even remember like going through most of my steps. I'm just meeting with my sponsor and we're like reading the book. And then like I'm reading the book, I'm remembering all these things that my sponsor's telling me, you know, like reading the little things that I have written. So, like, circle back to Jim, I was able to make, So I'm through the step process. I'm taking other people through the steps, and I'm still sending Jim all this money. You know, and I said, like, if at any point, like, you want me to come, you know, if I can come and, like, you know, see you in person, like, please let me know. And I got to the very end of that $2,500, and I write this long letter, and I said that, you know, like, I very much appreciate you even taking my money. Like, I don't even remember exactly what I wrote. You know, and I asked my sponsors, is this okay? And I sent the last amount of money, and, like, I, crap you not, like, 2 weeks later, he died. And I might get emotional. It just made me feel so good that I was able to, like, make amends, like, a complete amends to that person who, like, changed my life. And I really thought that, like, I was literally going to, like, spend my life in jail. Like, I don't know what I thought. Like, I thought that, like, I was the worst human being possible. What kind of nurse, like, goes in to save somebody and, like, keep them alive and, like, steal from their kids? You know, like, that's what alcoholism took me to. And, like, what AA took me to is being able to make amends as best as I could to that person. And, like, whether he truly forgave me or not, like, that's up to God. But, like, I feel like he did. And it, like, changed the course of my whole sobriety. And, like, it really did. Like, something that I thought was going to be so incredibly awful changed the course of my sobriety. And there's a lot of moments like that, you know. Just giving up to God, like, allowing God to, like, handle my life. And I let God handle that part of my life. And it just changed everything, you know. I no longer steal things. I have my own car. You know, like, I'm employable. You know, I am a nurse today. So, like, I went through this program. It's a 3-year program where I have to, like, prove my sobriety. Makes sense, right? I have to, like, you know, give urines, whatever, blood, whatever they want, like, make sure that they know that, like, I'm, you know, not drinking and taking care of patients. I went through that for 3 years. It wasn't easy, but I did it. You know, I got my nursing license back. I started working in drug and alcohol. It was tough, you know, but I did it, and I climbed the ladder, like, super fast. I became the supervisor of an 85-bed hospital, and then I became lead supervisor of that, and, like, now I'm somewhere else, and, like, I'm employable. Like, I'm somebody that, like, I'm proud of the nurse I am. I'm proud of how employable I am. Like, I can go and sit in an interview and be like, I'm a great nurse. You want to hire me. And, like, I truly feel that way. Like, it's insane. I have that confidence, but I just know, like, who I am. I'm not just a nurse today either, which is the only thing that, like, I had. Like, at the beginning of my sobriety, if I wasn't that, I wasn't anybody. And I meant that to my core. You know, like, I'm a mother. Like, if somebody asked me, like, who I am, like, I'm Tina. Probably a mother first. I mean, my kids are the best thing that's ever happened to me, and they're adorable. I mean, there's many children that are adorable, but, like, mine are adorable. You know, I'm a mother. Like, I'm a wife. I'm an employable nurse, you know, like, I'm a daughter, like, I'm part of society, I'm proud of who I am, like, I can, you know, hold my head high, like, I'm just, the person I am was always there, you know, for sure, like, I always was this person, I always can be this person, but, like, I am an alcoholic, and if I'm not willing to, like, have that relationship with my higher power, if I'm not willing to be able to, like, invest in, like, helping others, you know, like, I love that about AA. We come in here, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to kill myself. Like, help me. Like, my God. And I'm, like, crawling in. I'm like, oh, this is absolutely horrendous. And they're like, cool. Like, I'll help you stop drinking. And then they, like, throw it in there. Like, but you're going to help others. You know what I mean? It's not, like, this unconditional, like, yeah, we're just going to help you stop drinking. And, like, that's it. Like, we're going to help you stop drinking. But the way we're going to do it is, like, you're going to be, like, helping others the rest of your life. You know, I didn't come in here knowing that. You know, but, like, now, like, that's what I do. Like, I come in here to, like, help others. Like, consistently, like, I have to help other women. Like, I have to take people through the steps. Like, I have to have that relationship with my higher power, you know, and not just in AA, like, you know, being, you know, whatever, like, at Wawa, you know, my job, like, I have to be, like, a woman of dignity, because, like, that's how I stay sober, but, like, that's how I remain, like, Tina, like, this Tina, like, who I am, which is important to me now, you know, and I think that's important to God, and I have this relationship with God that, like, I think that, like, I'm important to him, that I can, like, do his work well. You know, I actually looked up my name recently, and I think Tina means warrior of God. And I looked it up because I was looking at my kids' names. Like, that's so cool. So cool. You know, and, like, growing up with this idea of God that was like hate and love, and it was like this really like deep, dark, crazy like thing, you know, which a lot of religions are. Like, I'm sure we can all agree or understand that, but like, that's not who my God is anymore. Like, thank God that I'm able to like identify with a God that like makes sense to me. Like, that's what AA did for me. Like, you know, AA was able to give me a relationship with my higher power, give me a relationship with other women, like a relationship with myself that I'm proud of. Keeps me away from like drugs and alcohol, like that's great, but like it gave me so much more than that. And they tricked me into doing it too. You know what I mean? Like, I came in here to stop that, and they tricked me into like being like a woman of grace and dignity. You know, how crazy is that? And I'm just really proud of that. And I think that's where I got to. I think I'm gonna end there.
The group would like to thank Tina for sharing her experience with us tonight. The group would also like to remind anyone who needs a sponsor to please see someone after the meeting. Would anyone who has working knowledge of the 12 steps please raise their hand? And we will close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
Lord, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Okay. What's he doing up here?
I wasn't sure if there's a both of you. I need in my country very few people.